This is the oral history of World War II veteran Peter George Palmos. Peter served in the U.S. Army Air Corps with the 89th Attack Squadron, 3rd Bomb Group. He served in the Pacific Theater. His highest rank in the Air Force was Colonel. I'm Tom Swope, and this interview was recorded at the reunion of the 3rd Bomb Group in Concord, Ohio, on June 9th, 2006. Peter was 85 at the time of this recording.
And why don't you give your outfit right now?
I was in the 89th Attack Squadron during the war, and joined the outfit in September of 1944. And
let's back up a tad. Do you have any specific memories of December 7th, 1941?
December 7th, 1941.
Pearl Harbor attack?
Yes.
Where were you at that time?
I was in Sacramento, California, where I was raised, and I was that particular Sunday I was sitting on a couch listening to the radio and found out about it. At that particular time I was going to college, and at that point in time I had finished some what they called civilian pilot training, which is a government program teaching people going to college to fly. And so I had finished that program, and I think I got my private pilot's license just before the war started.
So when did you go in? Were you drafted then, or did you...
No, I... as a result of that, I wanted to get 2 years of college in order to get into the Air Force. And so I waited until I got my 2 years of college in, and then I... went down and volunteered for the flying training, the aviation cadet program that the Air Force was, U.S. Army Air Corps was doing, and so I volunteered, and after a few months I was accepted, got my my physical out of the way and my mental thing out of the way, and was selected for flying training. As a result of that, because of the backup, we waited 6 months to get into the active flying training program. During that period of time in college, every night we try to celebrate one New Year's, and we selected a New Year's, Vietnam New Year's, any New Year's, you know, German New Year's and so forth. So every night we try to celebrate because we thought we were going to go into the military and die. Mm-hmm. So we had a good time in the college.
So when did you report for training?
Reported for training in January of
43.
And went down to Santa Ana, California. And went to primary flight training in Cal Aero, which is near Ontario. Went to basic training in Taft, California, which is near Bakersfield. And then I went to the hellhole of all places, Douglas, Arizona, which was on the border of Mexico. And that was a terrible, terrible, in fact, I think it was the worst base that I was ever on. Apparently the people who ran that base were just terrible. And anyway, it was a very terrible situation. The food was terrible, the quarters were terrible, everything was terrible about it. But we graduated from flying training, at which point in time, Chuck Newton and I, who was in the other room, we were in training all the way through. We went to Sacramento, California, my hometown, and we went through B-25 training there in Sacramento, California, for 3.5 months. At which point in time, both of us were very interested in getting the A-20s. And lo and behold, the opportunity came. So we went to Columbia, South Carolina, and were selected to fly A-20s. And we went to Florence, South Carolina, and started to train in A-20s. So after that, after our finish our training, we went to Georgia, and took a train all the way across the United States, and arrived in Hamilton Field in about August of 44, and then got on a C-54 and flew to New Guinea.
How long a flight would that be to New Guinea?
Well, we landed in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. We landed at someplace, and I don't recall where. Well, we landed at Johnson Island. Right. And by the way, some 30, 40 years later, I was squadron commander at Johnson Island for a year. And so that was an interesting sort of thing. But be that as it may, we landed at Johnson Island and then landed somewhere else and ended up in Port Moresby, Port Moresby in New Guinea.
So this would be sometime late summer, early fall of 44?
Yeah, August 44. Because I joined the 89th in September.
Mm-hmm. So you flew combat missions, I assume?
Flew combat missions, started in... At that point in time.
Remember your first combat mission?
Yeah, it was over WEWAC. And let me tell you about that. In order to get us, WEWAC at that point in time had been neutralized. There was still combat. There was still Japanese there. But in order to get us trained to learn to go over target and all, they gave us these, what you call, milk runs. We went over and strafed and bombed. And these people had been bypassed, so therefore they were the entity, but you know, it was sort of a training kind of thing, but people got shot down over there. So went on that WEWAC mission, and but I think two or three is what we went on. They didn't count against our missions, by the way. It was sort of a training kind of thing.
Wasn't there enemy activity in that area?
Yes.
You should have counted.
You would think so. And they may have, but I don't recall that they did. I flew 48 missions when the war ended, and so therefore, at that point in time, the war ended, so it came home. But we spend some time, and now the thing about the A-20 that you have to know, it has very short a range, so our targets were somewhat limited. So when we were in Hawaii, we went from Moresby, and I joined the outfit in Hollandia. Now the Hollandia is called something else, but at that time it was called Hollandia. And so I joined the outfit there, and the missions there, because of our limited range, were very limited. So we pretty much sat on our panties and did very little until such time as we got up to the Philippines. So very few missions were flown when I was at Hollandia, because we had no targets other than WEWAC.
Right.
So the time came when we moved up to the Philippine Islands. We landed at Leyte. We went up on an LST, and that was the worst experience that I've ever had. You're on a ship, we're in a convoy, we were on Leyte Bay, and the Japanese come over and bomb and blow up a LST right next to you, and there's nothing you can do. You felt like there's nothing you can do. You just hope that they didn't hit you. We finally got onto Leyte Island, and we landed there and built up a community tents and things of this sort on the beach, and we're waiting for them to build a runway so we can operate out of them. But at that point in time, you know, this is around, March.
March 45.
The rains were so bad that you lay down this, what we call pure steel planking. And pure steel planking is a metal device that you put to build runways. They lay it down and it's sinking into the mud. We lay it down, sinking into the mud. We never operated out of Leyte because of the weather. So our airplanes, I was a young pilot, so you know, we came up in the LSD. The experienced pilots were back in New Guinea waiting for a field to be built. So as a result of that, we didn't get operation until we moved to Mindoro. Mindoro was a field that there's no rain and things of this sort, so we built a field. And so the first real missions that we had was at Mindoro. And this was in the summer of 44.
44, 45?
45.
Yeah, 45, yeah. That would be right.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Thank you.
Just trying to keep the timeline.
Yes, yeah, so summer of 45. So at that point in time, we flew a lot of missions. We flew missions to Luzon. Most of our missions are close support. We flew low-level missions, always in close ground support, and the most rewarding thing during my mission was to be able to come over some American troops on a ridge. They'd wave at you, you know, and you come over and they'd shoot a smoke bomb where they wanted to shoot a bomb and straight, and you'd shoot it and you go in and hit it. And about 2 days later, we had the opportunity to get the results of our activity. In the strategic war in Europe, you didn't find out what you did until after the war. We, in turn, were able to get feedback almost immediately.
So close support was probably mostly personnel?
Close against enemy troops.
Tanks.
They were on a ridge of some sort, and we went in and did that kind of activity. We did very little interdiction. We went out after some ships and things of this sort, but most of my missions were in support of ground troops during that period of time. So I flew missions throughout the Philippine campaign. That was where most of my missions were done. Subsequent to that, about July of 45, we converted from an A-20 to an A-26. The A-26 turned out to, the A-20 had 650 calibers firing forward. We carried four 500-pound bombs. And our legs were, our missions were four and a half, five hours is the most. We converted the A-26. Now that was a better airplane, faster, substantially faster. We carried six 500-pound bombs rather than four. We had 14 50 calibers firing forward rather than six. It was a marvelous, marvelous airplane, much faster. And we had longer legs, so we flew missions to Formosa and bombed interdiction there. We bombed railway marshaling areas and things of this sort is what we did there. So, at that point in time, we had gone, that was in the Philippines, and about that time we went up to Okinawa getting ready for the landing of Japan. At which point in time we start flying missions to Japan. So, and this was about latter part of July and August, at which point in time we start flying in missions to the southern island of Kyushu. And we had a completely different environment to fly in. Rather than going in and over jungle and things of this sort, now we were flying in a metropolitan area. We were a low-level outfit, and we'd have to go underneath telephone lines and things of this sort. So it was a completely different environment for us. So we flew about three or four missions to Japan, and then we dropped the atomic bomb. And as a result of that, the war ended about that time, at which point in time I had 48 missions. And after that, General Kenny, who was the commander of the 5th Air Force, wanted several organizations that were his favorites to cover the surrender in Japan. So we had three airplanes from each squadron, and I was one of the persons selected to fly up to Japan in August of 49, August 31st, I think is when it was. And we landed in Natsugi, and going into Tokyo, we came into Tokyo Bay, and here we were, you know, before the war ended, and flew right over Imperial Palace and landed at Natsugi, and we shouldn't have done that, by the way, but we did. We landed there, and we were met by a group of Japanese who were, they had these old trucks that burned charcoal. And the only way to get to and from, and they put us in barracks, and they had very little in the way of food and things of this sort. So anyway, be that as it may, we stayed there. We just had enough gasoline. We were supposed to do something in case the Japanese were to turn and start fighting us, but we had very little gas to be able to do that. But on September the 2nd, we were part of the group that flew over the Missouri and on surrender.
Part of the ceremony, right?
The ceremony. Part of the ceremony, we flew over. We had, I think, three airplanes from each squadron. We had 12 airplanes from the 3rd Bomb Group, which I belonged to. We had the fighter groups, the B-29s. We had all kinds of airplanes throughout the thing, and we flew right over the Missouri, so we were part of the ceremony, and it was a very, very rewarding kind of thing. And about a month or two later, like, got home and spent Thanksgiving with my parents in Sacramento, California. That's basically.
Did you have much fighter opposition during the time you were flying? They didn't have much of an air force at that point, huh?
We saw fighters. Believe it or not, we were flying over Luzon, which was most of where they were. At one time, I was flying, and I looked up, and here's an airplane right in front of me, and he was in a landing field going into land. And I had my guns on. You're not supposed to energize your guns until you're going over target, you know, because you didn't want to shoot down your own airplane. Had I had my guns on, I would have had a Japanese Zero, but I didn't. But no, we had very, first of all, we were fast. The A-20 was a fast airplane at that time. And if we did have Japanese aircraft, they had one pass and they were gone. But we really, during my tour, I didn't get a single bullet hole in any of the airplanes I ever flew. Everything's sort of mundane. The only problems we had was with weather, finding the target, these kinds of things. And basically, my combat. Now, one airplane that I flew that was mine, you know, you have an airplane to sign, and you didn't fly every day, so someone else would. They went over a target. And these Japanese, what would they do? They found out they were flying close ground support, so they'd bury bombs or something in the ground, and when they came over, they'd explode them. And this one airplane that I had was all full of debris as a result of the debris that came up and hit the airplane. They couldn't fly anymore. He got back, but in my case, not a single bullet hole. I was very fortunate. Everything turned out fine. And as a result, I have no war stories.
Did you lose any buddies over there?
Oh, several. A lot of people. We lost a guy over Cebu City, a very good friend of mine. We lost people over Formosa, a guy named Egelhoff. In our squadron, we lost several people. And I was just fortunate. That's all there was to it. And so, we had losses, and it was just one of those things that I was fortunate not to have had any effect on it at all. Everything was fine.
Any other particularly vivid memory come to mind when you think about that time?
The comradeship, the environment that we lived in, the negotiating for benefits like a wood floor in your tent, that kind of thing, trading things with the Navy to get certain things. It was a fun kind of a thing. No, from a standpoint of No, it was a. We had a. From a spectrum of combat, we had a very good tour. Very good.
And it sounds like you stayed in the Air Force then?
Yes, I did.
When did you finally retire?
I retired in 74 as a full colonel. I came back, went to Enid, Oklahoma, and as a result of having 2 years of college, there was a program where they wanted people to join the regular Army Air Corps at the time. And it meant going to Fort Smith, Arkansas. And never been to Fort Smith, so I decided to go. So I went down there and got a tour of 3 days of written exams and so forth and all. And so as a result of that, I had a personal interview with about four people. In that four people was a whole Army. There were a parachutist and an infantryman, and so all colonels. And they said, "Why do you want to stay in the Air Force?" I said, "I don't know that I do." I said, "I don't want to finish my school. I want to get two more years of college." And I said, he says, "What was the, you know, what do you feel?" I said, "Well, the best rewarding thing that I ever did in the military was close ground support. I supported the ground troops. And I think that did it. Because as a result of that comment, I got appointed as a regular Army officer in the regular Army. And I accepted a commission in the regular Army. And as a result of that, I spent 31 years in the military. So that's how I got involved with the military. And after you get up in rank, they assign you to administrative kinds of things. You no longer fly because you're older. So I got involved after I finished my, by the way, I went to 2 years of San Jose State College and got my bachelor's degree in business administration, went to the Pentagon assignment for 3 years, went to University of Pittsburgh and got my master's degree, and as a result of that, I got assigned to a TAC recce outfit in Germany and spent 3 years in Germany, France and Germany. And then I went to the Air Command and Staff School. And as a result of that, I got assigned to the Ballistic Missile Program. The Ballistic Missile Program was a priority number one program in 1956. And I got assigned to Los Angeles Air Force Station. At that point in time, we couldn't wear a military. We were civilians. We couldn't tell them we were in the military. We were really developing this ballistic missile, intercontinental ballistic missiles. So as a result of that, I spent 4 years in Los Angeles doing this thing. I got stationed to the headquarters of Research and Development Command. I became a project officer. And finally ended up in the space program. Space program. And I got assigned to Sunnyvale Air Force Station, which was the central point for controlling all the military satellites we ever had. We had all kinds of military satellites, and we controlled them from there, and I spent 8 years there. I had one remote tour at Johnson Island. Remember I told you? One remote tour, I was a base commander there. Very interesting experience. And Johnson Island at that point in time was a station set up to do nuclear testing in the atmosphere in case the Russians again broke the moratorium. At one time, they broke the moratorium before that, and it took us 3 years, 4 years to begin testing for ourselves. This time, they said, we're going to have a station ready to do the testing. And if the Russians broke it, we'd be there. So we had computers there, we had launch stations, we had everything at Johnson Island in order, it's sort of like a fireman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens, we have to be ready to do it, and we have to be ready to do it in 30 days. So I did that for a year. Came back to Sunnyvale and finished my career in the space program, and we had a very, very, very successful space program in the Air Force and in the United States. And I retired in 74.
Very good.
That's my life.
That sounds great. Anything else while I grab something here?
No.
I'll leave the microphone running in case you think of any other stories.
No, I can't think of anything other than the fact that my career in the Air Force was rewarding. I feel like I've accomplished something, and I feel very, very happy about that.